First up, right off the bat, we'll be talking to Dr. Gordon Edwards, who's the president, not just a member, but also the president of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility. Dr. Gordon Edwards has been on the program before, where we've talked to him about a variety of nuclear issues, of course, that being his area of expertise. But we haven't talked to him in a while, so what we're doing today is we're having a little bit, he runs a through the CCNR, just a mail list of sending out articles and the major mainstream media about nuclear issues worldwide. He pays particular interest to Canada, so it's good good if you want to look up the CCNR if you were a nuclear issue interested person and get on their mailing list. Very, very informative, and he's I don't know how he does it. Almost no articles that ever get published seem to slip through his fingers, but so he's an excellent resource both through his expertise, which is in math and physics, and then 20 plus years of experience with nuclear issues, and of course very, very well read and stays up to date as well. So we're going to check in with him. One of the articles that came across my desk recently was talking about the fallout, both literally and metaphorically speaking, from the Fukushima nuclear disaster in 2 years ago in Japan. So we're going to do a bit of so what's happened with him since then on that issue about 2 years past on Fukushima, and then also we're going to relate that to ongoing refurbishment issues having to do with Darlington, for instance, in Ontario. So we're going to start with Across the Seas. We'll bring it back home for the end of that piece. So it's been a little while since we've spoken, Gordon, and we had a great chat last time. It was really great, and you're coming through, and I've got hundreds of emails coming into my Green Majority account, and your name keep popping up, and I said, and I kept meaning to, you know, we should really get him back on. He was a great guest. And then the one across my desk here, that the title of the article from the New York Times you'd passed on was "The Flow of Tainted Water is the Latest Crisis at Japan Nuclear Plant." And in the description of it, you'd said something about Fukushima 2 years past. And I said, you know what? Now's the time. We're going to get him back on the line. I hadn't even been personally. Fukushima had left my mind, a couple months ago, and I'd sort of moved on in my active memory to other issues. And I think I'm probably paying more attention than I think your average person is to what's going on. So I think that's a very standard reaction. Do you think most Canadians have forgotten about Fukushima at this point?
Well, unfortunately, I think people are mystified by the technology, and so they don't really understand that even 2 years into the accident, we're still facing major, major challenges. The TEPCO Corporation, that's the Tokyo Electric Power Corporation, built 7 huge underground tanks. They call them tanks, but really all they are is pits lined with polyethylene and a clay, bentonite clay. And they've been filling these pits. Each pit contains tens of thousands of gallons of radioactively contaminated water, too dangerous to release into the Pacific Ocean or anything else. And these underground tanks are now leaking. 3 of them, at least, of the 7 have been leaking. And so now they're building a whole series of above-ground tanks because the infiltration of water continues all the time. Groundwater is rushing into the damaged reactors. And as the groundwater comes in contact with the radioactive cores, which have melted down, they're becoming extremely radioactive. And so this water has to be stored in new pits. So what they're now doing is they're cutting down a whole small forest in order to build above-ground tanks that they can put these wastes into. They've decided that the below-ground tanks were a failure, so now they're building above-ground tanks. And they're still trying to save money because the whole thing is enormously expensive. And the actual cleanup of the site, The International Atomic Energy Agency says now that it will take more than 40 years to even deal with these problems.
One of the things just while you were describing there with the pits, it really reminded me of also what's been going on in Alberta as well with the quote-unquote tailing ponds there. They've chosen the word ponds for those, when in reality they're kilometers wide. Does it not seem to imply to a certain degree that when we're using language, which is something I'm always paying careful attention to, is people's choice of words there, is that there seems to be an implicit knowledge that they understand that Canadians would be really upset about these sorts of issues, or the Japanese in the case of what's going on there. But, I mean, just in general, we can relate it back to Darlington and everything about that, about these careful choices of languages that have been done to try and either mystify and make it less comprehensible or reduce the impact. Seems to be a tacit admission that they know that Canadians wouldn't be for this if they really knew what was going on.
Well, exactly. I mean, they use language which is, well, they talk about nuclear safety instead of nuclear hazards. They talk about spent fuel instead of irradiated fuel, because the fact of the matter is that when the fuel is irradiated in a nuclear reactor, what comes out of the reactor is millions of times more radioactive than what went in the first place. And the reason for this is because inside the reactor there is a splitting of atoms, a fissioning process, where uranium atoms are being split, and you get hundreds of broken pieces of uranium atoms, which are intensely radioactive, far more radioactive than the uranium itself. And these are the materials which are causing so much problem over the long term. They're going to be dangerous for literally hundreds of thousands to millions of years. And that's what's in this contaminated water. Another thing that people don't understand is that when you shut down a reactor, people think, oh, good, now it's shut off, now it's safe. No, it's not safe. The reason is because you cannot shut off the radioactivity. And the radioactivity alone is so intense that it has to be cooled. That is, the irradiated fuel inside the reactor has to be cooled for at least 5 to 10 years before it can be safely taken out of the wet pools that they're stored in. So what we have here is a situation where heat is being generated in an unstoppable fashion. There's no way you can shut off this heat because it's due to radioactivity alone. And that's why they have to use more and more and more water to try and remove the heat. But the water, it's sort of like the reverse Midas touch. Everybody's heard the story of the Midas touch, where King Midas, whatever he touches, turns to gold, but he ends up starving to death because he can't eat food. As soon as he touches food, it turns to gold. Well, this is the reverse Midas touch. Everything turns to radioactive crap as soon as it touches the reactor core. And the result is that that you really have a serious problem. Now, a lot of this stuff went into the Pacific Ocean originally in the opening weeks of the accident. Now they're trying to contain it, but they're having great difficulties doing so. And the radiation levels at the perimeter of the plant have already crept up to the point where they can no longer maintain the standards which they were hoping to maintain for radiation levels. So it's really a terrible mess. Now, one has to ask the question, many people think, well, God, why do they build these reactors in such an earthquake-sensitive area? Well, we might ask the same question. Why are we building nuclear reactors right on the shores of the Great Lakes? Imagine if such an accident were to happen at a reactor along the Great Lakes. Where would all that water go? Well, instead of going into the Pacific Ocean, it would go right into the Great Lakes, which is the source of drinking water for 40 million people. So I think that a reasonable approach would be to say that let's take a lesson from this and not allow any more nuclear reactors to be built along the shores of the Great Lakes. There's just no way it should be built there.
Another graphic that I saw, Gordon, was that really just it stuck in my mind. The image burned itself into my mind because it was such a shocker for me. I may be mistaken here, but I believe it was actually in a Toronto Star article from a few years ago. And what they were showing was it was specifically for Darlington Nuclear Reactor. And they were showing that at the point of construction, people that were within the mild, medium, and major sort of hazard zone, if there was a meltdown, they have those, they have the hazard map saying, if there was a problem, here's the affected area. And what they did was they overlapped the people that were living within those three zones, I guess for this, just sort of like check to see sort of what the hazards would be, what the fallout would be, again, pun intended. And the difference between who was living there when they built it and how many people are living within those zones now. And it's gone from like thousands of people to hundreds of thousands of people are now living within the danger zone of these factories, probably completely unaware that they're in a danger zone.
Well, if you take the Pickering reactors, which are much closer to Toronto, that evacuation zone would cut right into the heart of Toronto. So you'd be having to talk about the evacuation of Toronto. We're talking about maybe 20 miles to Pickering, whereas Tokyo was 150 miles away from Fukushima, and there was serious consideration of evacuating Tokyo, which, of course, would be an impossibility. Well, I don't think the government would be able to evacuate Toronto either. So I think we're dealing here with a situation where either we learn the lessons of the past or we don't. And, of course, a lot of people also are comforting themselves by saying, well, we're not going to have, like, a tsunami on Lake Ontario, so we're safe. That's false hope because, in fact, it wasn't the tsunami itself that caused all this damage to the reactors. It was self-inflicted damage caused by simply a lack of electrical power. If the electrical power systems are wiped out for any reason whatsoever, for a prolonged period of time, reactors are going to melt down. And the reason for that is because, as I said before, there's so much heat being generated by the radioactivity that it's more than enough to melt the core of the reactor. So in Sweden, for example, just a couple of years ago, they had a problem where there was a grid failure, so there was a power blackout. And they tried to start up the emergency generators. The first one would not start. The second one would not start. And the third one they had trouble starting. And finally they got it started. And they were only 7 minutes away from a meltdown.
Wow.
And the reason for that was not anything to do with the tsunami. It was simply due to the fact that temporarily they were out of electrical power to run the pumps to cool the reactor. And if that reactor core is not cooled, even if it's shut down completely, it's going to melt. So we have this problem that is a generic problem. It's a problem of all nuclear reactors, and it's one that I think people have got to stand up and say, no more new reactors along the Great Lakes, at least.
So, Gordon, I think this is the perfect time. There was one question I rarely write questions ahead of time, but there was one I kind of came in packing today. And one was, when I was doing research for this and I was looking around at different articles, some of the ones that you'd posted and a little bit of my own, I'm still to this day, and I've been seeing it for years, but I'm sort of, I guess I was surprised to see, still to this day, there are still groups you can find websites that will come up. I don't know how many people there are. I don't know how much big support there is. I don't know how legitimate they are. But you'll still find websites for, you know, concerned environmentalists for nuclear power. Now, I guess it's admittedly very unfair to ask someone who's has a lot of concerns about this technology, or at least how it's being used, to kind of strawman the other person's argument. But I mean, in seeing as I don't have access to any of those people today, what arguments could be made? Where are these arguments that nuclear is still a better environmental option coming from? Could you at least try to paraphrase their arguments, or at least sort of maybe say why you think that there's still so many people saying that?
Well, when I was in high school, I learned about, there was a Walt Disney film that we saw in high school called Our Friend the Atom, and it showed the friendly giant, the atom as a giant, sort of putting all kinds of good things with a smiling face.
Kevin hasn't talked yet, but he's nodding his head. I think he might have seen it as well.
And the idea of this is that nuclear energy was portrayed as being clean, safe, cheap, and abundant. And consequently, I was in favor of nuclear power as a teenager because that's all I knew about it, was that it's safe, clean, cheap, and abundant. And if that's all you know, or that's all you think you know, then why would you not be in favor of it? The point is, however, that this is based upon ignorance. It's ignorance of the technology. Because how can you say that a technology is safe when there's no off switch, when you cannot, in fact, turn it off? Like most machines, if they start going in a dangerous trend, you reach for the off switch and bang, you shut it off, and thank God you saved the day. You know?
Sure, there's a factory. There's those big red buttons to shut down the machines if somebody gets caught.
Precisely, and how many thrillers have been made by Hollywood where they just disconnect the bomb at the last second and that sort of saves the day. Mm. Well, the problem with nuclear power is there's no way to shut it off safely and walk away from it. You just can't do that. Mm. So inherently, this is a very dangerous machine. The other thing, of course, is that in addition to mass-producing electricity, which is a good thing, and we like to use it for our society, we need it, but there's many, many other ways of generating electricity which do not simultaneously mass-produce dangerous, toxic poisons which basically last forever. And that's the problem with nuclear power, is that while it's producing electricity, it's actually creating a huge, enormous inventory of highly toxic radioactive material which cannot be neutralized or destroyed by any method known to science. And as a result, it's going to remain dangerous for hundreds of thousands to millions of years, far longer than the span of human history. But the worst thing about it, and this is the thing that bothers me the most, is that as we've seen with recent developments in Iran and North Korea, is that anybody who has access to so-called peaceful technology, that is, nuclear reactors and uranium enrichment, can also use that technology to produce atomic bombs. So while we're spreading this peaceful technology around the world, we're spreading the capability of building atomic bombs, and we're literally sowing the seeds of our own destruction. So all these considerations add to that the fact that they can't even pay the bills. The nuclear people require constant subsidies. Private money simply won't invest in it. They even have, for example, every insurance policy has an exclusion clause saying you are not covered in the event of a nuclear accident. And while the nuclear proponents, the people who propose nuclear power and say we definitely should build more, they don't point out that that even though they tell people that they are crazy to worry about an accident because it's not going to happen, they nevertheless go to the government and require a special law to protect them against financial liability precisely in the case of such an accident. So even though they say that you shouldn't worry about it, they're worried enough about it to get a special law passed to protect them.
So we've only got another minute or so left there, Gordon. Unfortunately, time's been flying by, and we're on a bit of a compacted schedule today. But I want to get one more question in there, which is that when I was looking around, I couldn't really find any poll data or anything like that. But this is your issue. I feel maybe you've got your finger a little bit closer to the button than I do. Do you have any sense of how Canadians poll on these issues, or I guess specifically in Ontario, seeing as that's where the majority of the nuclear activity is? Do you know how the public feels about this? Are they generally? My impression, I should say, has been that most people don't understand it, and therefore they don't really have an opinion.
Right.
What is your impression then?
Well, my impression is that the informed opinion is largely opposed or certainly concerned. The people who are in favor of it often know very little about it. They know very little about the specific technology, the specifics of the technology that make it dangerous. That's because there has been no public education on the point. However, the government of Ontario announced just this week that they're going to consider delaying the implementation of any new nuclear reactors at Darlington, for example. And I think now is a very opportune time for people to become active and speak out and write to the government of Ontario, write to the government of Canada, and say we don't want our ratepayers' money and our taxpayers' money going to subsidize this this industry. They've already given $1 billion in contracts to SNC-Lavalin. Anybody who's been following the fortunes of SNC-Lavalin knows what how plagued with corruption that company is. They've already been given $1 billion in contracts simply to prepare a plan for refurbishing the existing Darlington reactors. I think people should object to this and say, hey, this is not a good way to spend our money.
Yeah. I'll take a couple of wind turbines personally, but that's just me. I'm afraid that is all the time.
Well,
we have
imagine what $1 billion could do if it was invested in renewable energy.
And sorry, let me just be clear about $1 billion. Is this an like a provincial level or federal level $1 billion?
No, this is provincial. This is
wow.
Provincially
okay, so
$1 billion given to SNC-Lavalin just to do paper studies.
Yeah, the relevance of that number, just to put it in context, just went up highly. I thought you meant it at a federal level, but if that's just
no.
A provincial project, that's wow. That's a huge number.
Right.
So I sort of lied. I have one final question for you, but it's a bit of a gotcha. we're promoting our new project today. I don't know if you heard my commercial on the intro there to the show. So I've got sort of a joking question for you, which was, would you support a Green Majority TV show? Do you think that's a good idea? Do you think people should come out and support us getting our own video equipment?
Absolutely. I think it's very important that alternative voices, especially in this day when there's so much corporate control of the media, and there's so little independence of journalists these days. We really need to have independent voices, and the Green Majority would be a great addition to that.
Well, I've always been a big fan of Fox News' tagline, so Kevin Farmer's here in the studio. He's fair, I'm balanced, and that's all the time we have for this interview, I'm afraid. But I want to thank you again very, very much, Dr. Gordon Edwards, who, of course, is the president of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility. And people, where can they go and get put on your mailing list if they want to get email about all these articles?
Well, we've got a website at www.ccnr.org, and there's an email at the bottom of every page, an email connection, and that goes to me, and I will put you on our mailing list if you want to get more information, and there's lots of information already on our website. If you go to the essays and answers section of our website, these are articles written by myself dealing with some of these issues.